last topic. And that has to do with wave motion. We've seen some of this in the lab. Some people will see it again in the makeup lab today. More stuff on wave motion. Okay, so that's what we're going to look at today. Wave motion. What are waves? Basically, what you have is a medium, and this is a disturbance of the medium. Hello? In which energy gets propagated through the medium. We can have waves in all sorts of systems. We can have one-dimensional waves, two-dimensional, three-dimensional waves, etc. Okay, typical waves that we'll see, we've already seen in the lab, waves and strings. One type of wave we'll focus more on in this chapter are sound waves. Obviously, we know there's ocean waves or water waves. So there's all kinds of waves. We could go on and on and on as far as the different types of waves. So let's take in the second half of the course. We should be seeing electromagnetic waves, of which light is a member of that family of waves. There are different types of waves. A wave in a string is a wave that's called a transverse wave. For a transverse wave, the actual particles, or the pieces of the string in the case of a string, move perpendicular to the direction of the wave motion. So the particles or masses move perpendicular. I saw this when I played with a slinky in the lab. I just thought I'd pull this thing out, dust it off a little. It's not really dusted off. But this is an example. If you look at the tips of the wave as I create a disturbance, right? Okay, you can see these points are going in this direction, but my wave is propagating for the other end. You'll notice that the wave comes over here, bounces back. That's a property called reflection. Right? Where it dies off after a while. Okay, so I just get the wave started. This is pretty short for doing too much, but if you do this just right, you're getting sick. Okay. So, the particles, in this case, represented by the tips. The yellow tips here, they're going up and down, but the wave is moving back and forth. Right? So that's perpendicular to the direction of the wave motion. Okay. So, later. Okay. There are longitudinal waves. In this case, the particles move in the same direction. Again, in the case of the slinky, if you remember, I stretched out the slinky and then I was pumping it this way, and you would see the slinky contract, expand and contract and expand. All right. An example of longitudinal nut waves would be sound waves. So what you would have, for example, you can have some air, and you would send a pressure wave. And that pressure wave would cause the molecules in the wave to move back and forth. So you would have regions here where the molecules are compressed together real close, and then they expand out, and then they compress together, and they expand out. And we'll see a little demo of this kind of motion in a second. So what we have here are different regions of high pressure and low pressure, and then those molecules here are moving back and forth as the wave passes. As that disturbance goes past, right, these molecules later are going to get compressed in. The ones that were pushed together at high pressure are going to expand out, and the wave will start, okay, moving. So the wave moves in this direction, and the particles move also in that direction, as opposed to the transverse wave, which we could think of in this case, the longitudinal is a sound. An example of waves on a string are that the mass or a piece of the string just goes up and down as the wave goes past. So here the wave pieces are going up and down as the wave goes past. Ocean waves appear to look longitudinal, but in reality they're not. They actually, because the particles, they go in a little elliptical orbit, so they're a different combination. But these are different types of waves, transverse, longitudinal. And you'll see throughout these chapters that there are different types of terminology, not only on the types of waves, but also on the wave behavior. Okay. Now, when you think of waves, you normally think of the types that we see in the ocean, right, where they repeat and they're periodic. Not all waves are periodic. So that's one thing that people have embedded in their minds, that waves have to be periodic. You take a piece of string, tie it to a pole, and flip it and send a pulse. That's a wave. All right, that's what's called a traveling wave, simple traveling wave. Okay. The other types of waves, so we have traveling waves, and we have sinusoidal waves. So typically you can have a pulse that just propagates. So I can have a pulse and a string. Right? That's a disturbance. If I keep doing it up and down and up and down, okay, I could create something more periodic. Okay, you can get sinusoidal waves. Sinusoidal waves are studied more often, and what we're going to see a lot more of in this discussion of waves, are sinusoidal waves. Now, let me bring up a couple more things here so we can talk about them. All right, so there are a bunch of links up here to different types of waves and different observations, etc. Like I said, we've seen some waves in the lab. Now let's see what kind of links we have here. All right, we have all sorts of links here to different types of waves, properties, categories, etc. Okay, we can have pictures of ocean waves. You should be familiar with these. There's nice ocean waves. All right, these look somewhat periodic. See the ripples across here. Okay. Can't see them too really close to them. But these are periodic. Well, really doesn't matter where it's from, does it?
I was curious.
Check out waves. No, they didn't say where it was from. Okay. Waves approaching a coastline, you begin to see waves come up to a coastline, right? Well, what do? They come over here just like a pulse, traveling down and running into that pole. It reflects back, okay, like this one that I was demonstrating with the little yellow tips, right? I sent information this way. It reflected So you're going to get reflection off the shores. Okay. You're going to get refraction. Now you're going to get a bending. Okay. Which happens. So you can get all sorts of interesting behavior. There's tons of satellite photos, of course, of what happens to waves as they go around islands and barriers and those types of things. This is quite complicated to study in three dimensions, or even that's basically surface waves in two dimensions. Okay, transverse and longitudinal, another representation. Okay, again, here's another representation of a transverse wave. Okay, disturbance you can see is propagating down here, but the particles are not going that way. The particles are just going up and down, right? As the energy goes off to the right, you can see that a particular particle can be followed. And we can describe these, right? This is a periodic sinusoidal type wave, and you can see this particle just going up and down, just like the mass on a spring, right? So that's going up and down at a certain rate. The faster that wave comes across, okay, the faster it's going to go up and down. So if this were the ocean, right, there's some water, you're standing right here, the water comes by, and you can watch the water go up and down on you, and as it goes by faster, it can go up and down faster. So we can talk about things like the frequency, okay, of the wave. We can also talk about the wavelength, which is the distance between two peaks. Okay, first, if I fix this in time, I can tell, but it, you know, these things are moving. So between this peak and that peak, these are at the same point at the same time. If I were to take a snapshot in time, I could see that a little better. But that, of course, isn't the purpose of this particular panel. All right? Here's the case of a longitudinal wave. Like a sound wave coming through and affecting the molecule. So let's say this is a molecule of gas. The sound's coming through, right? And high and low pressures cause it to move back and forth. Notice it's moving in the same direction as the wave, not up and down like the other one. So those are the differences between longitudinal and transverse waves. Okay. Obviously, there's all sorts of things, right? Guitars. Alright. Plucking guitar strings, you have a string that's fixed at two ends. You can create different tones and the different shapes of the waves that are created here. These are the standing waves that we looked at in the lab. Okay, will give rise to certain third notes. And we'll say something a little bit more about these before the end of class today. Okay? The Doppler effect, which we're not getting into the details of, so after the final's over, you can spend plenty of time, if you wish, okay, reading the stuff that we didn't go into in detail. Okay. When you start having physics withdrawal by about 20 or 30, okay, then feel free to open your book up and go read some more. You don't have to sell your book right away. Okay. Here's an example that you could think of in either three dimensions or two dimensions. My favorite example is that we've got a puddle of water, probably like the lake up there, in the middle of the campus, right? You've got water there. Of course, if you drop a stone, what does that do? That forms a disturbance, and then that disturbance propagates out the surface. Okay. Same type of ideas if I have sound in this room. Okay. It's kind of hard to get sound to be directed in all directions at once, but if I could get the sound to be directed in all directions at once, it would propagate out instead of in a circle, in a sphere. Right, and go further. So that energy goes out further and further in a sphere. Okay, so we could represent that same idea here with putting a drop there. Now, what instead of just having a rock dropped in water when I have a bug here. I can have the bug going up and down, generating little waves, all right? Or I could have some machine to do the same thing. But the idea is I could generate these waves continuously at a particular frequency. And let's see, I need to show the animation. I need to run. And that's going too fast. All right, so we can have the bug sitting here. Now, these things, probably I'm not very good at taste, but these are hard to see because they haven't been designed, okay, for presentation mode. All right. But, now this is going pretty fast, right? So, okay, decrease the sound speed a little bit. Okay. All right, so now the sound's not getting out too far. These are coming out. Notice these ripples coming out. I can follow these. All right. So that wave is moving at a certain speed. You can imagine that these circles, which we can call wavefronts, indicate the peaks in a sinusoidal wave. So I have a sinusoidal wave, and I just follow the peak as it goes out. So we have these ripples spreading outward. Okay, let's see, if I increase the speed of sound, well this is, let's see, increase this a little bit, that means the wave will get out faster. Also, so the distance between any two of these is the wavelength. So we can see this, basically see the wavelength. We could also have the bug move. Okay, and so, that's where I enable this. And now the bug is moving, and of course it creates, wherever it's sitting, a circle, that goes out, then it moves over, and then it creates another circle, so you see they kind of get scrunched. Okay, to one side, make this go a little faster, let's see. Source to go faster. All right, this is going faster and faster. You'll notice at this side, don't the wavelengths look a little shorter? Huh? Okay, now what we can do is instead of having this be a bug in water, we can think of this as an ambulance with a siren. Now, if you are, well, now, siren's approaching you, sending out a signal, you can see that the wavelengths are shorter. Okay? And we found out before that the wavelengths are related to the wave speed in such a way that if the wavelengths are shorter, then the frequency is higher. So as this keeps, ambulance gets closer, you're a higher frequency. Of course, if I'm behind it, all right, now it's going away from me. If I stay in here and don't move, I guess. Right? These wavelengths are longer, so the frequency will be less. All right? Well,
what's happening to the wave at the very end? Like, if you're just right outside the circle,
this is just a window, so I'm not sure what you want me to mean.
Well, when you're just outside of hearing distance, like I'm looking at this as you can hear the sound of the ambulance within the circle. Like, what's happening to the wave when you're right outside the area that you hear it? Is it?
Well,
like,
if I'm over here, I can't hear it.
Yeah,
it's not gets to me, right?
Well, you can't hear it at all. Like, let's say I'm so far away from the ambulance that I can't hear it. Like, what's happening to the wave?
Okay,
so
that's another property that we're going to run into. Okay, basically what you're asking is what happens when it goes so low in volume that you can't hear it.
Yeah.
Well, then you can't hear it.
Right.
Okay. But let me talk about, I'll be talking about the sound intensity in a few minutes. Okay. I'm not sure I answered your question. Okay. So there are a couple of different things. While I have this up, you can see these different types of waves. There's a bunch of links here for superposition, which asks what happens when I add waves. We talked about that in the lab. We'll say a few more things about that in a few minutes. Okay. All right, so that's probably enough of that for right now. Let's summarize a few things and Maybe. Answer Aaron's question. All right. So those are various visual pictures of waves, some of the phenomena that we can see happening. Okay. Some of the terms that I use in looking at these, for instance, is wave behavior. So things I said were that we could see reflection. The wave can come up to a boundary and bounce off of it. All right, so that's reflection. We have refraction. Okay. In the case of, say, water waves, we can see the change of water waves' speed as the depth changes. Okay. Of course, I'd have to go into more detail on why that's true. But that's a particular example. So what we can have here is that the wave speed can change. As I go from one medium to another. So as I go through different media, for example, I'm talking right now and the waves, they're vibrating the air, but they're not necessarily getting through the table at the same rate, right? They go down, they hit the table. The table, believe it or not, is responding. It's bouncing. But we don't hear it. Okay. If you go in the water and listen to somebody that's outside of water, what happens? The airwaves come in, they come into the water. The sound actually travels at a much different speed in water. And so you're going to have some refraction at the surface. So you can't see sound waves that much well. But you can see the water wave behavior. You have diffraction. Diffraction is what allows somebody to hear me around the corner. Okay, this is where waves bend. Okay, so if I have, for example, an island and I look at water waves from satellite pictures, you can actually see how the waves, as they come along, bend around the island. That's what diffraction is. This is more of a bending around obstacles of the waves. So those are just some of the wave behaviors. We also have superposition, which is a fancy word for saying addition of waves. If I have two waves trying to occupy the same space at the same time, they will add up. Okay. There's a lot on superposition in chapter 17. We're not going to go into those details because we don't have the time to go into those details. We'll just talk about a couple of results of that as we go along. All right, so those are some of the features of wave behavior. I also talked about the Doppler effect. Okay, when we looked at our little bug going across the water, okay, we could see that a moving object relative to a source can produce two different wavelengths depending upon whether it's coming towards it or away from it. Okay, and so the Doppler effect, again, we're not going to go into the details of the math behind it, but we can at least see what's happening. Okay, so what are we going to do? Well, let's see. Let's go back to our sinusoidal waves. Other features I pointed out on our sinusoidal waves. Remember when the point was going up and down and up and down, and I said that it had a particular frequency. And we can talk about the frequency of a particular wave. If I were to stand at that point, right, the water waves are going up and down on me, I could just plot the height of the wave versus time. All right, so if I just focus at that one of those points that was going up and down, I could represent where it was at a particular time, and it would look something like that. All right, as it's going up and down. So it's going up, it goes down, and I'm letting time go. It's just like the mass on the spring. So this is the height of the wave. I don't know, we'll call it y for the y direction. What is the distance between any two peaks in this picture? This is a function of time.
Period.
Remember we did the period? This is completely analogous to the mass on the spring. So that's the period. So we have to remember the period is t, the frequency f is related to the period, tau, 1 over t. What are the units?
Hertz.
See, this much we know already. Okay, so for waves it's the same thing. But if I were instead to fix time, just take a snapshot of the ocean, like one of those pictures we saw before, right? Or as my string is oscillating up and down. Okay, as that thing's oscillating up and down, we could take a still shot of it, and we would be able to see the height of the wave as a function of position. So our sinusoidal waves, we can see how they vary as functions of time as well as position. So they're functions of two variables, which make them a little more complicated to visualize. So we can do this again by taking snapshots. Here, this is a looking at the height of the wave at a particular position. Here, we could look at it at a particular time, right? Which is what we usually see. We don't see things over a pretty long period of time. We can't picture. Okay. This progression in time quite as easily. So in X, we have a very similar type picture. Okay, I'm going to draw that a little differently for the same wave because the distance between the peaks here now is not the same number as that one. Notice this is an X. X has units of meters. The distance between the peaks we'll designate with a lambda, which we call the wavelength. That's a lowercase Greek L. Another Greek letter for our collection. Wavelength, units. It's length, so it could be meters. So that's the distance between two peaks for our wave. Now, as I indicated, if the wave is coming at you much faster, again, thinking in terms of water waves, right, sitting out in the middle of the ocean, right, here's what you see, right, generally speaking, okay, for the peaks of the water. And as this is propagating, moving, right, at another instant of time, of course, these peaks have shifted. And you're standing there, and they're coming past you. And it's going faster and faster. They're going to go up and down in your body quicker. So there's a relationship between how fast your wave moves. So if I picture this wave as moving with some wave speed, right, that wave speed can have an effect on the frequency. In fact, wave speed is the frequency times the wavelength. Okay, the relationship here. Frequency is units of hertz, or what's another way to write hertz in simple units?
1/seconds.
1/seconds. All right. So 1/seconds times meters is meters per second. So again, it has the appropriate unit, meters per second. As I was indicating with the Doppler effect idea, remember I was saying, all right, the wavelengths were shorter on one side. So if the wavelength is shorter and the wave speed is fixed, that means in order to keep F lambda constant, F has to go up. So if the wavelength goes down, the frequency is going up, and vice versa. The wavelength is going up, the frequency is going down. All right, so for for that type of an effect, right, that would give you a quantifiable verification of my statement before. All right. Well, first we need to say something about wave speeds. Okay. What is the speed of a wave? Well, it depends on the situation. As we had seen in lab, for strings, the wave speed was given by the square root of the tension in the string divided by the mass per unit length. So the problem with tension in the string, being designated with a T, is we already have a T on the board, don't we? So why don't we call that F? Maybe I'll make it F sub T. This is the tension. So in our experiment, we had tension, and we divided it by the mass per unit length. Mu is the mass per length. And then we looked at sending waves, okay, through that particular string. If you increase the tension, you're going to increase the wave speed. If you increase the mass per unit length, you're going to decrease the wave speed. And so this is how one gets it. Now, we didn't derive this. It takes a little effort to derive this. Okay, and we're not going to convince you of why the wave speed looks like that. Okay. Let's see, what else? We have sound waves. One could write down the formula for the wave speed for a sound wave, but you're not going to remember it. Okay, but if the wave speed for a sound wave basically depends upon the bulk modulus. Okay, the idea is I have air, water, whatever the sound is propagating through. How is that propagating? Well, we're pushing the air together. It's expand, right? It's deforming. Okay? You compress it. You have a change in volume. Right? We know that the change in the volume, okay, per original volume is related to the force per area that's being exerted on it, right? The pressure. So as this pressure wave is coming through, right, the pressure wave is stressing the medium, and the strain is going to give me that wave motion, right? But then it's going to restore itself to equilibrium. Just like the mass on a spring, right? We had the mass hanging on a spring. We pulled it down, right? We got it going through some kind of oscillation, right? Because we deformed it from equilibrium. Same idea with sound. You go ahead and you deform your system. So we could write down a nice, ugly formula. We could use an assumption that ideal gas laws are at hand, and there's actually a derivation which allows you to take and produce an equation for the velocity of sound, at least for normal type sounds, in air. So the velocity of sound in air turns out to be 331 meters per second at 0. At 0 degrees. Velocity of sound, well, we're going to see what the velocity of sound looks like, some of us in lab today. Of course, we're not usually at zero. All right, this is air, by the way. When you make a correction, depending upon the temperature. Temperature. If I take the temperature in Celsius and multiply it by 0.6, it gives me a rough estimate for how fast sound is moving in here at that particular temperature. So 0.6 times Celsius temperature. Look at room temperature. Whoop. Okay, give me some room temperature. 22 degrees. And room temperature. Okay, so in room temperature, let's see. What should this plus 0.6 cc is 331 plus 0.6 times 22. What's 0.6 times 22? 13 degrees. So 13 plus 331 is 344. All right. So 344 meters per second. Is that fast? We can just convert that. A meter is approximately, but not quite the same as 3 feet, right? So even taking that, 3 times this quantity is going to be on the order of over 1,000 feet per second. So it's like 1,100 feet per second. What about in other material? The sound speed. What's the speed of sound in water? Yes, there is. Okay. He would be amazed. Okay. Speed of sound in fresh water at 20 degrees, 1482
meters per second.
Meters per second.
It's faster.
Much faster in water than in air. You're quick. Okay. I don't know. We can make a. Let's see. Somebody can make a noise. You'd be underwater. You can hear it and jump out of the water real quick and hear it again. Well, they're you know, might sound a little strange. Maybe there's reasons we don't. Maybe the, you know, you have to be far enough away for that time difference to be enough that you can hear it, right? Sound has to be loud enough so that it doesn't dampen out. Okay, by the time it gets to you.
Is it 14?
Yeah, it's on the order of 400. It's in the text.
What degree?
20 degrees. Okay, so speed of sound, what did I say? 1482 meters per second at 20 degrees. Of course, I'm relying on the textbook to be right about that. But I know it's high. I know it's on the order of 1500. So that's pretty fast.
So as the temperature of the water went up.
Yes, it could. But this is not the formula for water. This is the formula for air. You have to come up with a different formula for water. So this is all we know. We can't, I mean, we'd have to look this up. We'd have to look it up for different temperatures or find a derivation that will allow us to determine how fast it's going at those temperatures, which we're not going to do. All right, so that's... So far, okay. So those are the different types of oscillations we're going to have. Of course, sound is fairly familiar, so we can talk about sound a lot. As far as wave motion, we can hear things. So there are some aspects, such as refraction, reflection, diffraction, these types of things that are studied much easier of electromagnetic waves and light. So in the second half of the course, these are touched upon in more detail. Okay, back somewhere around chapter 27. Okay, in the textbook. But there are, like I said, there are other things we can do. We can sit and talk about sound for a while, so let's talk about it. Sound. What are some characteristics of sound that we know about? Well, first off, we could talk about the frequency of sound. There are plenty of reasons why we might not hear that siren, as Aaron was indicating. One possible reason is that it's out of our hearing range. Okay, so there is a hearing range for us, which is on the order of 20 hertz to 20 kilohertz. Of course, that's for the normal ear. All right, 20 hertz. 20 cycles per second here, from 20 cycles per second up to 20,000 cycles per second. Just imagine 20,000 cycles per second. Okay, these are pretty high sounding noises. Some of us might be surprised when we find out we can't hear this much, especially when we get to my age. Okay. In the last couple of years ago, I guess, I was playing with some sound software, and I was playing some notes, and it was amazing. You know, why isn't this playing? I was up around 18 kilohertz, something wrong with it, so I couldn't hear it. Somebody else could hear it. So, there is a range of hearing which is not good. Yeah. Okay, not only is there a range in terms of frequency, but there is also a volume range. So if I were to play even a note that was halfway in between on this range, if I turn the volume down, it'll get down to a certain point that I won't hear it. Okay, and I think this might be along the lines of what you were looking at. Question before. So we could talk about volume of sound. Technically, we don't really talk about the volume. We talk about a related thing called the intensity of the sound. Instead of its volume. Now, it turns out that the intensity or volume really depends is proportional to the square of the amplitude of the sound. So if I look at the amplitude here, one can show that the volume is proportional to the volume or the intensity is proportional to the amplitude of the sound. Okay. But we're going to be a little more technical about intensity. Let's see. First off, we have to define intensity. Okay, some books use I, some books use S for intensity. Okay, just to keep things simple on the last day, I think I is a good letter to use. Intensity. The intensity of the sound. If I have some sound being generated by a source, mostly the type of source that you would generate would be a speaker, right? You would have some speaker, then you crank it way up, right? You wanted to wake the neighbors up or whatever. Okay, so we have some intensity. The intensity is given by the energy being produced per time divided by area. Okay, what is energy per time? Power. So we could think of how much power we have divided by area. And so this is the intensity is the power per area. So I could think about having some little source here. Okay, spreading out all of this energy. Actually, what we're going to do is consider a point source. Okay, so if I have a point source here, it's going to produce these waves. Now these waves, right, it even does boom, right, not even periodic, right? You can watch that energy spread out away from it, right, in a three-dimensional sense, just like our two-dimensional rings before in the puddle up on the screen, right? So you see these coming out. All that energy is spread over the sphere. Okay, so you have a certain amount of energy per time being spread over the sphere as this is going out. So we could look at standing at a position away from that speaker. We know that the speaker delivers so much power. Let's call that PS for the power at the source. Okay. And you're familiar with some of these, right? You get the speaker systems with 450 watts and whatnot. All right? You want to get these big, powerful speakers that can play these noises, right? That can deliver so much energy per time. And you've got so many watts of power, and that energy gets spread out, right? Once that boom or whatever noise is made, of course, if I have a tone coming out, which is sinusoidal, you'll watch the wavefront, and then another one will follow, and another one, right? But let's just follow one. Let's just imagine somebody went like that, and you get one, you know, that wave comes out, okay? And all of that energy spreads over a sphere. So for the intensity I have is the original power of the source, whatever the wattage is that's coming out of that speaker, divided by the area that all that energy is distributed over. The fibers standing at some distance R away from that speaker, okay, we could say what the intensity is at my position. If I stood further away, we'll find out the intensity goes down. Okay, in other words, you don't hear as much, right? If you go further and further away, you're not going to hear as much, right? By the time it gets to you, it's not going to be quite as loud, which is obvious. So the question is, what is the area that that's spread over? Well, it's the area of a sphere. The surface area of that sphere. And we don't know what the surface area of the sphere is. We have to look it up or go next door and find out that the surface area of the sphere goes something like 4 pi r squared. Okay, so I have so much energy per time for area. All that energy is being spread over the sphere. It's going further and further and further in time because these waves propagate at a certain wave speed. Notice that for that particular speaker, PS over 4 pi is a constant. What this basically tells me is that the intensity goes like 1 over r squared. The further away I am, the lower the intensity. This is called an inverse square law. Now, this works fairly well, providing I have all that energy being propagated uniformly away from the speaker. If I have unidirectional sound, if I've got purposely aimed waves that are going out, this doesn't work quite that way. Okay. So anyway, so we have an inverse square law. So let's see the effects of the inverse square law. Let's say I have sitting here, I don't know, let's make something that doesn't have such power. Let's just go with 45 watts. Let's say I have a 45 watt signal that's being spread out. Okay. And let's say that I am 1 meter away. So the first thing is, at this point, what would the intensity be? Well, according to the formula, I take power divided by 4 pi r squared. So what is that power? 45 divided by what? 4 pi. Times 1 squared. What is that?
3.6.
About 3.6? What? What is it? the units of intensity be?
Watts per meter squared.
Watts per meter squared, right. All right, so 3.6 watts per meter squared. Okay, now the question is, what if I put somebody else over another meter, one more meter away, at the 2 meter point, what would the intensity be at that point? Okay, well, of course, we could do this, where we could note that the ratio of the two intensities, okay, if I take the ratio of this intensity with an R1 here, and to an intensity with an R2, that the PS over 4 pi's would cancel. And so the ratio, let's say the intensity at the second point divided by the intensity at the first point is going to be, well, let's go through that. Intensity is going to be what? PS over 4 pi R2 squared. Divided by the second, we get PS over 4 pi R1 squared. Notice the PS's go out, the 4 pi's go out, and I'm just left with R's. So I get what? This is 1 over R squared divided by some 1 over R squared is the same thing as multiplying by a reciprocal. So I get R1 squared or R2 squared. So ignore the stuff in the middle. The ratio of the intensities is the inverse ratio of the squares of the distances. So the question is, what does that tell me for this problem? Let me write that out simpler. I2 is the intensity at the 2 meter point divided by the intensity at the 1 meter point is equal to R1 squared over R2 squared. What is R1?
1.
What is R2?
4.
2. Right? Remember, R is the distance. Total distance from the source. So if I double how far I am, what happens to the ratio of the intensities? It goes down by 4. Alright? What does that tell me for I2? I1 is 3.6. What's 1/4 of that? What's 1/4 of 3.6?
0.9.
So when you take a look again, here's my source. At this point, we know we have 3.6 watts per meter squared. If I double the distance from the source, according to the inverse square law, we should go down by 1/4. All right? So if this were actually 4 watts per meter squared, that would be 1. And what if I went 3 times away? How much would it be reduced by? By a factor of 9, right? Because the ratio of these, basically I have 1 squared over 3 squared, 1/9. Okay, if I triple the distance, the intensity goes down by the square of the ratio of those. So it goes down by 9. If I went out 4 times the distance, it goes down 1 over 4 squared. That's the idea of the inverse square law. So the intensity drops off quickly. Yes?
If it goes down by a fourth, why don't you subtract 0.9 from 3.6? Why?
Let's say it goes by a ratio of a fourth.
Okay.
No, it doesn't drop. Yes. We don't subtract. It's by a factor of 1/4. Okay? This terminology. Just come up here. Right? Basically, I2 is equal to 1/4 I1. Right? You saw that? All right. What else can we say about intensity? Well, the other thing we can talk about is what levels of intensity can we hear? Okay. There is something called the threshold of hearing. That's the lowest intensity one normal ear. I mean, they always term this in terms of normal ears. All right? Just like when they get to the optics part, they'll talk about normal eyesight. But normal hearing, okay, the threshold of hearing is on the order of 10 to the minus 12 watts per square meter. That's a pretty small number. Okay. There's also an upper limit. All right. This is the lowest we can hear. What's the loudest we can? Well, it's not really the loudest we can hear. It's actually what's called the threshold of pain, which depends on what book you read, but it's typically on the order of something like 1 watt per meter squared. So in terms of sound, okay. That's a pretty big threshold of pain. These numbers are really, right? So you're going all the way from scales of 10 to the minus 12 up to 1. All right, so we really need another unit. What's more than that is changes in these levels really go by powers of 10. They don't just go by increments of 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, you don't really notice substantial changes unless you multiply by say 10 or 100 or whatever. So the typical thing to do is to look at what's called the intensity level, not the intensity. And the intensity level is something that's used a little bit more often in classifying different types of noise. Okay? So for the intensity level, what one can do is instead of looking at I, what we could do is compare the intensity to the threshold of hearing. What we're going to do is call the threshold of hearing a reference intensity. You then take the intensity that you're interested in and divide that intensity by 10 to the minus 12. And then you get some number, still a big number. And then what you do is you take the log of it. Okay? So what we get here essentially is, well, there doesn't seem like there's any units. Right? The units go out, we take the log, so we could have something, right? We could have some hearing intensity of, say, 10 to the minus 8. I could divide that by 10 to the minus 12, I'd still get some big power of 10, but if I take the log of it, that gets rid of the powers of 10. Now remember what log is. What is log? It's not ln. Okay, this is the common log. This is base 10. Common logarithms. Okay, the log that we use here is log base 10. There is, of course, as far as you're concerned, it's just an log button, right? On your there. But that turns out that this is not quite enough to define the intensity level. If I stopped here, we would end up getting something that has what's called units of bells. Okay, but become more adapted to scale this by another factor of 10 so that we get, instead of bells, we get deci, which is 10 bells. Decibels. So many decibels is the intensity level. So let's look at an example of numbers of decibels. Let's say I have an intensity which was, as I said, 10 to the minus 8 watts per meter squared. Okay, question is, how much louder is 10 to the minus 8 watts per meter squared as compared to the threshold of hearing? And so we can go through and compute that, right? We have beta decibels is given by 10 log 10 to the minus 8 divided by 10 to the minus 12. Of course, we don't need our calculator for the first part. Let's see, 10 to the minus 8 divided by 10 to the minus 12, that means just multiply by 10 to the plus 12, right? So what we have is 10 log 10 to the 12 minus 8 is 4. Okay. So now we can do that. But if we remember what logs are, what is the log? The log is that function which tells you what power you must raise 10 to get this. So what power must I raise 10 to get 10 to the 4th?
4.
So that's just 4 times 10, or 40. So we have 40 decibels. Okay. Well, what, that doesn't tell us much. All right. So that tells me there's a 40 decibel range from the threshold of hearing to even 10 to the minus 8. So what? 40 decibels doesn't mean much to us, does it? Okay. What we could do is ask, how many decibels would it take to double an intensity level? Okay, well, I can show that if I have two different intensities, let's consider two intensities, I1 and I2, then the intensity level difference between the two of these can be gotten by the following. I call this delta beta in decibels. One can actually derive that by putting in I2 in here, put I1 in here, then subtract the two. But it turns out that it's very simply the log, 10 times the log of I2 over I1. So that's the change in the number of decibels as I go from I1 to I2. So if I go between two intensity levels, we can easily figure out how many decibels change that is. And let's, as I said, this is an example. Let I2 be twice the intensity of I1. So I have two levels of intensity, right? So we have a certain noise level, and we'd like to know, if I increase by so many decibels, when have I gotten twice as loud? All right. Then that might make a little more sense out of what 40 decibels means back here. So how many decibels does it take to double the sound? All right, so let's see. The change in intensity is 10 log what? I2, which is 2I1 divided by I1. I1 over I1. Canceled. So all I have to do is compute the log of 2. Now my little what power of 10 do I need to raise 10 to get 2 doesn't work, because that's not obvious in my mind. So we have to pull the calculator out and compute. What is the log raise 10 of 2 on your calculator? What? 0.3. So roughly 0.3103 or something. But it's 0.3. 0.3 times 10 is 3. So guess what? Only 3 decibel change, difference in sound, corresponds to doubling it. Okay, 6 decibels means you double it twice, which is what? 4 times? Alright, so now that's already 4 times the sound. Right? 40 is getting up there, right? So you have to do quite a few doublings of sound to get up to 40 decibels. So that's 40 decibels is a big change. Okay. All right, so that's intensity level. Mostly we use this formula, which, as I said, is easily gotten from just applying that to two different intensities subtracting. and applying your logarithm rules, which, by the way, I put a link up at the notes section to remind you of some things about logs in case you need to remind yourself about those. Okay, so what have we looked at? We've looked at sound can have various frequencies and intensities. The typical things about intensity are, first off, it satisfies the inverse square law. And second off, the normal way to talk about intensity is by talking about decibels. Where decibels is a log scale that's used just like the earthquake scale, the Richter scale. The Richter scale is also a logarithmic scale. Right? So small changes there really correspond to large changes in intensity. Okay, the last thing I want to do is actually a review from the beginning of the week of standing waves. Did this in the lab. Okay, as you recall, the idea in the lab was the following. If I have a string and I fix it at two ends, right, I can pluck the string and I can cause waves to go in back and forth in the string. The idea was that I have a wave that we sent toward one end, it reflects off. But if I'm sending a periodic wave one way, it reflects off and adds up to the one coming in the other direction. So we ended up creating what were known as standing waves. All right, the idea of a standing wave was that we had some waves that instead of seeing them go back and forth like this, we saw them just standing there. So for example, here's... we had a part here where, remember... these are transverse, so this piece of the string goes up and down. A piece over here goes up and down, etc. That point does not move. It's called a node. Likewise, you've got pieces down here that are going up and down and up and down. So we pluck a string, and we can create these standing waves. Usually a string has a length. All right? Because it's fixed at the two ends. All right. And for particular strings, they have wave speeds associated with them. It depends on the tension. All right? Remember a few minutes ago, I wrote the wave speed was the square root of the tension divided by the mass per unit length. So, for example, for various guitar strings, right, you could have, number one, you could have a different mass per unit length, different types of strings. You could have different tensions by tightening up the strings or loosening them. So one could have different waves going through these things. But once I have a string and I've got it set at a certain tension and a certain mass per unit length, then I could ask what types of waves, okay, could I have in here? These correspond to pure waves, pure tones. So if somebody told you that you're playing an A note, right, then you pluck it and you're playing an A as a pure sinusoidal note. Of course, there's a little more to go with that because of damping and also the cavity of the guitar, etc. Okay, but at least for the vibrations of the string, we're typically looking at standing waves, or what we'll call harmonics, the different harmonics of the string. Now, looking at this particular wave that we can set up, we're really interested in how many nodes we can use. So the first harmonic corresponds to a wave that just looks like this shape. It's just going up and down like this. There are no nodes inside this wave. So for this one, we'll call that n equals 1. Okay, corresponding to the first harmonic. Again, this is length L. All right, just like the picture we have here. And how many wavelengths is this?
Half.
It's a half a wavelength. Or the wavelength is equal to 2 times L. So the wavelength for our harmonic is just 2L. Of course, we don't listen to wavelengths. We usually listen to frequencies. So we can go and say, all right, well, if I know the wavelength is 2L, can I write down the frequency of my wave? If I know the wavelength. Well, if I know V, I can. So I can come over here and say, the frequency is the wave speed divided by the wavelength. Remember, the wave speed is frequency times wavelength. So let's see, let's just V over 2L. So that corresponds to the frequency that we would hear for this particular string being played. Okay. This harmonic. Okay, let's look at the second harmonic. Second harmonic corresponds to taking a string and having one node in the middle. Okay, so we're getting a little more complicated than the second harmonic. So let's see, I've got a node here. I have a wave that goes like this. In the first half, this piece is going up and down and up and down. Part going down, going up. Alright, so you've got these pieces that are going up and down like this. It's fixed at these ends, and it's a standing wave with a fixed node in the middle. So let's see, and we do the same kind of derivation. What does L look like?
One.
It's one wavelength. Alright, that's the shape of one wavelength. Or the wavelength is L, so let's see, what would the frequency be? The frequency is V over lambda, which is what? V over L. Actually, I could write this with the same denominator. I could write this as 2V over 2L. Okay, and this corresponds to the N equals 2 case. The n equals 3 case, we've already drawn over there. So let me redraw it. How do I do that? Put in 2 interior nodes. And now this is getting a little more complicated. Right? Each third here is moving independent of the other two. Our two nodes are fixed. And this is going to correspond to another frequency. Let's see, what is the wavelength here? Or what's L equal to? How many wavelengths?
One and a half
and 3/2. Solve that for lambda, and you get 2/3 L or 2L over 3. Let's see, what's the corresponding frequency then? Three V over 2L. Be the corresponding frequency. All right, we see a pattern here. Let's see. For n equals 1, I get nv, get 1v over L. For 2, I get 2v over L, v over 2L, I'm sorry, and the f is 3v over 2L. And you can just imagine what the nth harmonic looks like. The nth harmonic would look like
n
times v over 2L. In fact, all of these are multiples of f1, of this one. All right, we call this one the first harmonic, f1. Notice that these are actually all multiples of f1. Sometimes f1 is called the fundamental because you can get all the rest of them by just multiplying an integer times it. So these are the harmonics of a vibrating string. Okay. Okay. Now, without going into any detail, we could do the same thing for sound waves. Okay, sound waves, we can look at pipes, right? You can set up pipes. Some of us are going to do this in the lab in a half hour. You can set up air columns and vibrate the air in the column. And you can set up standing waves in pipes. And the standing waves and the pipes are pretty much discussed in the same context. You can come up with fundamental frequencies and get various tones. Of course, pipes, what does that lead to? That leads to things like pipe organs, right? Or playing flutes and things like that. Setting up the air waves in the columns and setting up standing waves in pipes. So, that's pretty much it on the standing waves for now. It's all the time we have. So, that was just, as I said, a summary of what we did on Monday. Okay. And that concludes all the new material we're going to do. Okay, that's, again, that was a rundown on concepts about wave motion and the types of things that we think about. In summary, there are various types of things that we looked at with wave motion. One of the fundamental things is that frequency times the wavelength is equal to the wave speed. Okay, the intensity was the power per area, which goes like 1 over r squared for point sources. All right, I have a sound, right, basically tells me that the intensity drops off fast, okay, as it gets further from the source. We already know that, right? We already know that things don't sound as loud when we're further away from them. Right, this just gives me an idea how much. We also have the notion of comparing decibel levels. Right, these are intensity levels. Right, intensity is one thing, intensity level is something else. Don't confuse them, they sound alike, don't they? It's that one word level that gets thrown in there. So this is 10 times the log of the ratio of the intensity. Is the change in the intensity level. Right, so when people talk about the number of decibels at work, etc., my wife was having me last night about this. Sitting right next door to this buzzer they have that goes off real loud, and she's coming and speaking in her ears, how many decibels it is, and blah, blah, blah. And there are certain standards at work. And then after this, we have the various frequencies. Okay, which was what we have, V over 2L, harmonics and a string. So those are the main things I covered today. And wave speeds. But that's pretty much it. As far as new material, again, we have a review at a little afternoon. Okay, that's tomorrow. And Francis is going anxious here to hand out the box evaluation for the course, not for the lab.